Hey everyone, nice to see you. Welcome. Hot day, isn't it? Gotta love these middle of summer classes, my goodness me. Amazing that you've made it, that you're here, and even if you're feeling a little bit droopy, we'll go gently today. Absolutely, absolutely the case. So this is the 9th of August class. It's our second module 8 call. After today's class, we have a break for a week, an integration week, no new material, no reason to meet, no study group. So you've got a week to chill. And then we'll come back and do the last couple of modules and close. So yeah, came around quick, right? It always does. So yeah, let's just kind of ooze on in and take it easy today. So what we're going to do is just really start to think about conflict and how we coach with our clients around. So we're going to revisit the aims of this module. We're going to talk about the kinds of approaches that I found really help us in terms of how we go into coaching with folks who may feel a bit sensitive, a bit iffy about conflict. And we're talking about the whole family of conflict, from judgment to rejection to confrontation and all of that good stuff, criticism particularly. So I want us to start thinking about actually, like, almost coming into these sessions doing the thing that we're told to never do as coaches, which is have some assumptions, right, and kind of in some ways lead the client. Because what I've found is that when it comes to self-doubt, when there's protective beliefs underneath the behaviors, clients don't often know that they are trying to protect themselves from these risks, right? Because it's unconscious. So we're just going to talk about how to kind of raise your awareness around why that might be the case, and how you can just really support your client to play with this stuff. And of course, as we go through this in more detail, as you start working with folks with self-doubt and you start talking more about conflict, it's going to bring up your own stuff too. You may have found that already, that this module in particular is starting to shine a little light on where you may be kind of avoiding or accommodating in ways that don't feel great, right? In ways that don't feel great. So we're just going to go super gently and just look at this from the perspective of our clients. We'll do a bit of self-reflection. We'll do some coaching. We'll set some intentions for practice pods for you to play with. You just ooze on in, take it slow, take it easy, okay? So practice pods check-in. What's coming up for folks as you're playing with this material in particular? What are you finding is happening? What's coming up with your clients at the moment? Tell me all the things. Yeah, Fiona.
Mine was just a reflection that I'm not working with this material yet, because I feel like I've got a module lag, and it feels like it's taken me a lot of work to get through coaching with my own self-doubt. So I've kind of hung out there for quite a long time, just muddling around with all of that. So I'm here and I'm present, but I feel like I'm sort of a bit distracted from module 8 because I'm just not quite here yet.
So I just love this phrase, module lag. That is fab. Yeah, it's a real thing, right? It's like it takes a while to kind of integrate. Some of you might be going, wait, what? How are we even at module 8? Right,
and it feels so like bittersweet as well, like, oh yeah, module 8, like it's nearly the end, but I still feel like I'm not quite in the middle yet, like, oh
yeah. Anyone else feel like that? Yeah, cool, awesome. Yeah, it's almost like this is exactly where we're meant to be, right? This is the kind of messy middle of, oh, I'm starting to put the pieces together, and also, oh, but I'm not quite practicing yet, right? I love that, Sharon. I'm starting at the beginning. Yeah, again, yeah. I've had so many conversations with folks over the years who are like, it's going to take me ages to certify because I'm going back through and I'm figuring this out. And I'm like, there is no rush. There's absolutely no rush, right? And know that you can still, you know, utilize these tools. You can still play with these materials, you know, for as long as you feel you need to kind of integrate this stuff. It takes time. I'm still doing it. So it's that balance, isn't it, between I'm kind of doing this versus I'm holding back until I feel ready to do this. So yeah, totally get it.
Having Thanks said that, I also have been, so I've continued to work with the client that I've referred to a few times during the program where I've been quite entangled. And we had a session yesterday and he was like, what happened? That was like so different and so good. And I was like, ah, it's because I got into unentangled.
Amazing. Amazing. I love that feedback from clients. What do you think was different for you?
What I realized, and Nicola really helped me with this, was that so he has a lot of bystander protector energy, and I was sort of determined that he should get into action,
right?
And he was like, I mean, he never expressed this out loud, but once I kind of realized it, I was like, everything about him is trying to communicate to me without words, I actually need help figuring out why I can't make this decision. And yeah. So we just spent 2 hours yesterday and hung out in mapping the protective belief, in the belief biography, in there was something else we did, and then I've recorded the meet your protector for him to take away to do in between sessions, and it just was so felt really, really special to really just be like, oh, get off your own agenda, Fiona, get on his agenda, which is why can't he make decisions.
What a gift.
Thank you.
I love that. I love that. One of my teachers said sometimes we've got to slow down to go fast, which is one of those paradoxes that sounds very annoying when people say it to you. But I think that's what it is. You know, it's like, let's just hang out in the uncertainty and the discomfort for a bit. And actually once that gets healed and you feel okay about it, woof, you go so much faster. Amazing. Yeah. Bravo.
Thank
That's
you.
Really cool. Really, really cool. Anyone else noticing any small change in your work with clients just as you're playing with this stuff? Maybe it's not that your clients are feeding back to you, but you're noticing your energy is different. Yeah, Iris.
I also feel like the entanglement is probably the biggest thing that I'm not able to spot and then sometimes do something about. So I just generally feel a bit more relaxed about results and more relaxed about when a session isn't super in depth. And I've also gotten more into the habit of actually asking for feedback. So if I've had a session, especially where I mostly use the protective belief map for some reason. So whenever I do that and I don't really know if this was now a revelation or if this is like me, obviously, I just check in with people at the end, and it's very surprising sometimes when they say that it was super helpful, but because we're super matter of fact in how we go through everything, I don't feel it. And so that was really interesting to realize that if a client doesn't give me all the feelings, I can get entangled. And so that was just interesting. It feels like something has gone to a, I don't know, more detached layer. And then at the same time, I can see how sometimes that very specifically means I'm getting out of the way. So very much like what Fiona was sharing, that.
Yeah.
It's just really calming to know, oh, okay, like these icky feelings around coaching, you can do something about that. That's usually just entanglement. And so if you just observe it, that's a good start. And maybe sometimes you can get out of it too, which is great. But it really helped with, I guess, the whole good coach thing of trying to, like, not always trying to be a good coach, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Love that so much. Love it so much. I do genuinely believe that the most useful energy we can bring to a coaching session is loving detachment. It's like, it's just the bee's knees to be around as well as a client. It's like, oh, this is so cool. You don't really care, but you care. Like, yeah. That holding that kind of, yeah, another paradox. But yeah, really cool. Nice work, Iris. Yeah, I love that is helping you to observe and sometimes intervene. But it sounds to me like, for both Fiona and Iris, what I'm hearing is there's a sort of like, you can just chill a bit, like it's less work for you when you're not entangled because you're not managing two people's thoughts and feelings. Yeah.
Yeah. It feels a bit like my coaching is just growing up, which is nice. It's nice to admit that it needs to. And it's also nice to just be on the sidelines observing as it happens. When you're not constantly trying to prove to yourself that you're good. It's much more relaxing.
Amazing. That's so great to hear. I'm thrilled. Thanks for sharing, Iris. Brilliant. Charlotte.
Hi.
Hi.
This is kind of a little bit back to practice pods and stuff, and I hope that I'm not speaking kind of too much on behalf of the others in my pod, but I felt like we'd all kind of got very entangled with each other in this like good coaching thing, and actually we were there kind of wanting to really create change for each other in our sessions, and we have a setup where we actually try and have like an extra session with each other throughout the week anyway for coaching, and kind of more pure coaching, and let's play with this in a coach client relationship, and then have our pod meeting be a bit more like discussing the material, playing around with it a bit. And we just made the decision to go right back to the beginning and start saying, okay, let's actually play with two tools a week. And let's have no expectation on how we play with this tool. Let's just actually see it happen in real life for us rather than with that expectation of it being good coaching. Because I think there's this like comfort blanket in like, oh, well, I feel safe with this like meaning-making map, so I'm going to only use that, and I'm going to kind of forget that I have all these other tools that I can draw on. So that feels like a really exciting thing to be like, okay, we've got ourselves somewhere that we feel comfortable with this. Let's like jump out again, because the whole point here isn't just that we get transformational coaching as a coachee within this container, it's also so we as coaches get to experience these tools being alive. So yeah, it feels really, again, like Iris just said, like coaching being more grown up, like it feels as though that's like now a grown up decision about the direction that we take. And yeah, super cool. And it feels like, yes, whoa, how are we going into the last couple of modules in 2 weeks? But also like, wow, look at how much we've actually covered. And we have the opportunity to like actually catch this with a big fishing net and use it now rather than going, oh crap, it's now October and I literally only used two tools. So yeah, it feels like a fun time. Long reflection.
I love that so much. Yeah, no, really love that. And I really, what I heard you say that kind of really kind of piqued my interest is that recognition that we get all tangled up in our coaching pods. Look, we get tangled up with all of the people in our lives, right? Of course we do. So of course that's going to show up in coaching pods. It's going to show up in client relationships. What it sounds like you're doing is doing that thing where you slow down a bit, let go of some expectations and see what comes up, see what feels good, see what you're allowed to allow yourselves to play with. Very cool. Yeah. Nice. Really cool to hear. And yeah, this is what, and I know I've said this a couple of times, but this is absolutely the reason why there's ongoing support for as long as you want it. Monthly support calls as you're implementing and playing with this, as you're figuring this out. I think that when we start actually doing the work of client, you know, getting through this phase of like, how does this land for me and what's it like to be on the receiving end, to actually coaching someone through it, I think that's when we actually need lots of support. Because when you're coaching with a client, you know, an actual human being that doesn't know this material, they're going to ask all the awkward questions and they're not going to follow the process, and you're going to be like, wait, no, you have to go through this process this way. And so being able to flex into that and just kind of meet the client where they are, recognizing that the greatest tool you can offer them is your presence, is kind of how we figure this stuff out. And I think we need more support to do that than anything else. So that's why it goes on and on and on. Okay, fabulous to hear, guys. This is really, really great. Let me share my screen. Let's have a chat about module 8. We're exploring our relationship with conflict. We're helping our clients to explore theirs. We're thinking about styles of conflict. We're thinking about emotions. We've got tools, of course, but the idea behind the tools is always resourcing the client in the face of these big risks, judgment, criticism, and confrontation. Actually helping them to have some approaches at their disposal that are going to feel okay, so they don't have to try and manage the whole world to never be criticized, right? The criticism happens, and then I can respond to that. Considering what it means to listen deeply and to show clients how to do that, right? To actually listen to what's going on underneath the words, right? Underneath what you can see and hear. And these practices of reframing, playing with polarities, using accountable language. In relationships where there's high trust, low risk, where it's all about practicing your ability to be in situations and contexts where conflict is present, right? If we can feel okay about that, you don't have to love it, right? There's no kind of Pollyanna ending here. But when we feel okay about being able to show up to these circumstances, it means that, yeah, you're less worried about all the things that could happen that would take you to a place where you would be criticized. Because you're like, well, if that happens, I kind of know what to do. And it only takes a few experiences where you respond in a way that feels good to you, that really does give you this new evidence. I'm a person who can be with criticism. I'm a person who can manage that and respond to that in a way that feels okay. Someone can judge me and I don't fall apart. For us as coaches, when we can be okay with our own experience with conflict, we have these experiences that Fiona and Iris and Charlotte were all talking about, where you become much more aware of your own sources of entanglement. You're able to minimize that. It means your clients are going to have a really great experience of coaching with you. And it's going to be less tiresome, less exhausting for you. Okay, so last week we talked about kind of where we sit in terms of the four conflict styles. And we talked about like the ideal situation is that we get to a place where we're okay with all of these as styles. We recognize the strengths and the intelligence behind all four styles. And we get into this place where we have a fifth style that encompasses all of them, which is accepting. We accept that conflict is inevitable, and we try to anticipate that, take care of ourselves in that, and feel resourced to respond in ways that we feel okay about, we feel proud of. So what we're going to shift our focus to today is what this is like, this experience of conflict, what it's like for our clients. So I want you to just think about the people that you support, that you work with, and consider their experience of conflict. I've got a couple of reflection questions for you to play with here. So let's look at this. When you think about your client and conflict, what do they say about themselves and about others, about life in general? Like when it comes to conflict, what are your clients, how do your clients feel about it? What do they say about it? What do they think? If you're a business coach, how does the client's experience of conflict come up? What you're probably going to find is that your clients are setting themselves up to avoid it or accommodate it. So just write down some notes. What do you think your clients are saying about themselves and others when it comes to conflict? Please feel free to share in the chat if that feels good to you. And following on from that, like what are some of the things they do or don't do because of their relationship with conflict? So we're looking at the beliefs and the behaviors. What do our clients believe about their relationship with conflict, and what do they do or not do as a result? Yeah, and I love this, Fiona. I think this is quite typical. Fiona says my clients mostly don't actively talk about conflict, but they're obviously putting energy into keeping the peace and supporting other people. Yeah. I think that's absolutely typical. Very, very common. So if that feels intuitively right to you about your clients, how does that work? What does keeping the peace and supporting others mean to your clients? How are they avoiding conflict? What are they doing or not doing? And based on beliefs and behaviours, how do you suspect your clients are feeling when it comes to conflict? How are they feeling? So Iris is sharing something really fascinating here. One of my clients says, thank you after almost everything I say. which feels like over accommodating, making sure there's no tension between us whatsoever. Isn't that fascinating? Yeah. I think that kind of response, so the over effusiveness and also the sorries. There's all, you know, the people that apologize to furniture. Sorry, I bumped into you. Right. But the sorry, I'm thinking this. Sorry, I'm saying this. It's like, yeah, there's like an, it's all this comes from that same place. There can be no tension between us whatsoever. Curious to know if you've ever addressed that, Iris. If you've ever outrightly said, hey, what's this about? Okay. And so drawing on all of those notes that you've written, what do you think they believe about themselves and about other people? When it comes to conflict, what do your clients believe is true? Yeah, loving this in the chat, Charlotte, and I know, Charlotte, you really do work around this kind of approach of people pleasing. So I know you're going to have a deep insight into some of this, but yeah, it's safer to accommodate others than to have what they need for themselves. Massive. And Fiona, for some, there is a belief that conflict at work is the worst possible outcome. Absolutely. And this is really why we spend this module looking at conflict in these different ways. I think that it is one of the primary kind of symptoms of self-doubt is a pretty fearful relationship with any kind of conflict. Makes total sense. Very few of us have had conflict modeled in a really healthy way. So I just want to come back to module two. Remember we talked about developmental psychology and this model of adulthood where you have a forming self-concept, a formed self-concept, and a reforming self-concept. So all about how we make sense of the world, our collective beliefs and how we believe the world works based on that. So what I want you to start thinking about is how that translates into conflict, because it can give us some really great breadcrumb trails to follow with clients. Yeah. So I'm going to just share some ideas here with you, and then we're going to have a bit of a chat about it. So the forming self-concept and conflict, right? So the forming self-concept is around about 60% of adults. And it's that sense-making that comes from I am my relationships. Like my identity, who I am, comes from other people, what they think and say about me, how they make me feel like I belong. But also the rules that they give me about who I need to be to maintain and preserve that sense of belonging, right? So this can come from different places in our lives. It can come from our family, from an organization we're working with, from an industry we're part of. Like, who tells me who I need to be? That's who I'm going to be listening to. And our coaching for folks with a forming self-concept is to really internalize that healthy adult self, right? That healthy sense of who they are, right? That comes from them, comes from their values. So this is 60% of adults. This is probably going to be most of our clients. And it's also, from what you've described in the chat, right, folks that are taking care of other people, folks that are wanting to accommodate, that believe conflict is the worst thing possible. This is the kind of thing that we'll start to see when it comes to conflict, right? So risk is in the driver's seat of folks with a forming self-concept. They're all about trying to protect themselves from these risks. And they have real difficulties when it comes to conflict with identifying their own preferences, opinions, and ideas, making decisions when there's no clear right choice, right? Especially if they outsource their decision-making and different people give them different answers. That's like, well, I can't cope. I don't know what to do. I'm totally frozen. But also prioritizing their needs over other people. Right. Is anyone feeling like, oh, these are probably most of my clients? This is how I'm seeing this show up. Yeah, got some thumbs up. Yep. So the thing to know about folks with a forming self-concept is that what they're really doing is scanning the environment going, can someone show me how to be an adult? Someone tell me, right? What do I do to keep myself safe and to feel okay, right? And so what we want to support them to do as their coach is to create a healthy sense of who they are. So some ideas for this is to really support their questioning and sitting in the questions of what they want to do, who they believe they are, the opinions that are forming in their minds, right? So some of the kinds of questions that I would be asking somebody with this kind of developmental approach to the world, right? Why does this matter so much? Why does this particular conflict, this issue, why does this matter so much? What's at stake here? What do you feel specifically, right? Really getting the client to get good at articulating their own emotions and kind of feeling into those, right? So we use the emotion cycle to support them to go, okay, get into your body right now. What sensations are you feeling? Is that attached to an emotion you can name? What's the message of that, right? Allowing it to pass in. I think the more comfortable we get at sitting in uncomfortable emotions, like the quicker our capacity for conflict and for everything that feels a bit shit expands, right? So that emotion cycle, super key. So getting into why does this matter so much? What's at stake? How do you feel specifically? Right, who gets to decide what's true? Right, our whole world is set up with a hierarchical power structure that means whoever's closest to the top gets to say what's true. Right? So the client is always probably in this developmental stage going to put themselves at a lower level than the person that they are telling, that is giving them information, advice, etc. Right? And what is the cost of letting that person decide? What's the risk of not responding to their opinion? If you're asking someone, what should I do? What's the cost of letting that person decide what you should do? What's the risk of not responding to that? Right? All of these questions are designed to get the client to feel a little bit broken in their brain, right? To realize that, oh, I am actually following someone else's, what someone else believes is true for me. And it's going to elicit a lot of beliefs that we can then bust, support them to bust, right? Support them to find healthier beliefs. So this is what I mean when I say we're going to make some assumptions and we're going to lead the client a little bit when it comes to their relationship with conflict, right? Because it's designed to help them see you're creating this or you're feeding into a dynamic that isn't supporting you. I just want to pause there and take questions, comments, feedback. Sometimes that can feel a little bit uncomfortable. Would you use some of these questions in a discovery call? Maybe. Would you, Lorraine?
Yeah, I guess maybe I just thought the first one, but why does this matter so much? I just thought that would be really, maybe a really good question to have. I just wondered whether maybe some of them might just be too much too soon.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at this from the perspective of someone who has a reasonable idea of their self-doubt. And so we're supporting them. We've already articulated or acknowledged that there is some discomfort around the risks of rejection, conflict, criticism, et cetera, judgment. And so we're supporting them to figure this out. So what's the question behind the question? Why are you asking this?
I suppose I just like that one, why does this matter so much? And I just thought, I never asked my clients that. And I just thought, if you were to, I don't think I asked them that early in a relationship.
Right.
And I just thought, it's really actually really important, you know, actually why they, you know.
Yeah.
And actually why, and maybe it might get them to dig a little bit deeper as to, well, something I think I should fix. So I guess I just really liked that question first, and then I thought, well, could you use the other ones? But they just felt a bit too much too soon.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. I think you've absolutely. It sounds like that one's jumped out at you, and you're like, oh, I could use that. That takes me somewhere a bit deeper, and then you're using your discernment to go, well, actually, sounds like the other ones might be a little bit too much too soon. So, and the reason I ask, what's the question behind the question? Because my sense was, are you asking for permission? Because that's ironic, right? Because we're talking about you claiming your own preference, your own wisdom, and you get to do that. Yeah. So I'm with you. I think you've got it.
I like that.
Nice. Yeah. Really cool. Anyone else want to comment, say, share anything about this idea of questions that can help the client to sort of be in that place of there is no right answer, so what are you going to do? Because I'm not, as your coach, going to give you the answer either, right? And that can sometimes be the subtle expectation from a client, just tell me what the fuck to do. Right, life is confusing, the world is on fire, just tell me what to do, right? I'm starting a business, I'm doing a degree, I've started this new job, tell me what to do. I'm in this relationship, it's confusing the shit out of me, tell me what to do. Yeah, Sarah, are you putting your hand up? You're trying to figure out how to unmute. Okay. I love it.
I'm sat outside and the screen's a bit dark, so I'm kind of figuring out where everything is. Yeah. So I have a new client who has a very different relationship with conflict than anyone else I've ever coached before. So we went through his belief biography, and he had a history of bullying when he was younger. And his response was always get your fists out, and there's a lot of kind of fighting when he was younger and having to stand up for himself. He describes himself as being kind of the short lad that always got picked on in school, and that's transferred into a work environment where he blows up very easily. If anyone speaks to him in a way that he feels disrespected, then he can get a bit aggressive in his communication style, and that's holding him back from reaching a higher level in the organization, because they're a bit nervous about what happens if Pete gets frustrated and how does he respond with the client, etc. And then with he doesn't always respect other people in the organization from a communication perspective in the best way, but then he's an absolute so I suppose where I'm looking for advice is, where do I get him to start to see a different perspective around conflict? Because for him, he very much sees himself as, I have to stand up for anybody who isn't talked to and respected in the way that they should be. And it's very rooted, so sorry, it's very rooted in him that he has to stand up for him. Rather than kind of seeing conflict, you know, as the potential advantages in conflict, you know, I suppose I'm asking because it's so different from anyone I've coached before. He's always tried to avoid it. He almost wants to be in it so he can, because that for him
is what he has an adversarial style. Yeah.
Yeah.
He has an adversarial style. This is great. So I guess if it was me, what are you thinking in terms of, I mean, how would you judge his self-awareness about the concerns that his colleagues have about his behaviour? Is he aware of that? Does he care?
Yeah, so he's got some self-awareness in that he already feels, and he has, we've talked through examples of where that has started to shift and where he realises that immediately jumping to his, you know, being very defensive isn't always the best way to start to communicate with people. So we've got there, and he's given me some examples of where he's already started to evolve in that way. I suppose where I'm looking at what I would like to do is open up with some questions, him being able to shift his perspective, because he always, his immediate reaction is that this person is disrespecting me in the way that they are communicating with me, and that means that I have to respond to that with a similar level of communication, and then it's just fired. But it's a construction kind of environment, you know, they all call a spade a spade. Sure. It's very direct.
What you've articulated is a person who has found an effective way of keeping themselves emotionally safe.
Yeah.
If not physically as well, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's such a great example because it shows how different sometimes this can show up, right? Yeah. So Pete's got this great suit of armor that he's developed to deflect and defend at all costs.
Yeah.
And much like all of us who accommodate and placate, right, the kind of other end of that, what can happen is we just use one tactic for all conflict.
Yeah.
So he's doing exactly the same thing, just at the other end of the spectrum, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, the way that I tend to do this is start to open up things like, how does this keep you safe? Like, we want him to see this is working for him, but it's not going to take him to where he wants to go.
Mm.
Right? So it's like, this is keeping you safe. So how is that happening? Right? So you may even want to look at things like a belief biography, right? A sort of uncovering that belief, whatever it is. And it may be, if I'm not attacking, I'm being attacked. Right, it could. That sounds like that's the protective belief from what you're describing. If I don't attack first, I'll be attacked, and maybe exploring the biography of that. You could even give that to him as homework, But what I would also be doing in terms of, and I found this can sometimes meet with resistance, right, with folks who have an adversarial nature, but is to allow him to, or encourage him to start being quite mindful when he feels that sense of attack coming, right? What does he notice first? And you're going to be the perfect coach for him, Sarah, because you're very in that somatic place.
Well, that is the homework I set him from last week. So that's what we're going to talk into our new session, because I started with awareness, because I was kind of in that place. So I'm like, where are we going to go? It was just, let's start with noticing. What is it that triggers that response? Sorry, I'm at my parents' house. It's very noisy in the background.
No, you're fine. But it sounds like that awareness and that kind of, what do you notice first, right? Like, because there'll be a sensation in his body that probably goes to a flashpoint very quickly. And what we want to do is get him good at noticing that first little tickle, right? And you can use that kind of phrasing, can sometimes diffuse it. Oh, it's the tickle. I can feel it, right? And then it's like encouraging him to feel that, right? And what you want him to do is to have that very sacred pause between feeling that sensation of, if I'm going to be attacked, and if I don't attack first, I'm in danger. We want him to feel through that, so that he starts to see what else could be true in those few seconds, right? There's a diagram that you might want to show him in this module about the anger cycle and how the quick, like we go from, some people will have just run a little hot, right? And so we go to that flashpoint quite quickly. But the ability to stay rational and have good judgment decreases as that flashpoint rises. So it's like we're trundling along and then boom, we're into anger and boof, our judgment falls through the floor. And that's when we're likely to say stuff that is out of our integrity, out of our values. And it's also when we're likely to do stuff that's very much about kind of primal safety. So getting him to be in that place of, I feel the tickle, right, and responding from there when his judgment and rational nature, his healthy adult self, are really on top for him is a great place to start a bit off.
Yeah, that's brilliant, because I would have naturally gone kind of, let's bring in the pause, let's have some awareness. We're going to do some breath work stuff as well to help with the pause. But then I would have leapt into, let's choose what's a different response. But if I integrate the belief piece in between that, it's going to stick so much more effectively, isn't it? Because that's what's going to open his mind into the why this is actually important to change. Because
exactly, that, and that's exactly
what I needed, because I just felt resistance to, well, you know, from why would I change is very much in the headspace that he's in at the moment.
Yeah,
because it's working, you know.
And the thing is, like, we don't want him to have a full personality change, right? That's not necessary. This is about adding in something else. The benefits of him having that ability to pause is going to soften his work relationships and a beautiful way.
It's helping him see the strength in it, is where
massive strength.
That's the crux of it, because I feel like that adversarial style helps him feel strong because he's feeling self-doubt. So it's exactly. Yeah.
Okay. And I would say, to take this to an advanced place, you can also then start to look at, if I attack first because I'm feeling attacked, what's that like for the person on the other end,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I'm then attacking them. I'm creating the thing I'm trying to avoid in myself. How can I have compassion for both of us?
Yeah, amazing.
It will probably play into one of his values. If he wants to change this and is aware of that, there'll be a value in there about camaraderie, mateship. It's no accident that he has chosen a very alpha male industry. And it sounds like he's got to a level where, you know, he's getting coaching. So he's, mm-hmm. you know, he's done well, right? So he's succeeded in an alpha male industry. If he can also bring in a range of responses, it's going to take him to the next level in his career. There'll be some values in there that you can play with. Be great.
I'm excited there. Thank you.
Cool. So cool. And this leads beautifully. This is such a great example, Sarah, because it sounds like your person has a formed self-concept, and that's what we're going to talk about next, right? Mm-hmm. So great example. Thank you for sharing that. So good. All right, let me share my screen and we'll go into the next. So this is for folks with a formed self-conflict, self-concept and conflict, right? This is around 30% of adults, folks who are a bit more self-aware, who kind of have a sense of this is who I am. Let's remind ourselves what these guys are like. They have their own identity, right? So they're part of groups, but they can also see, oh, I'm allowed to be myself. I don't have to agree with everybody. I have my own identity. Protection of their self-concept is in the driver's seat, right? So this is me, this is not me, and I'm going to protect that sense of identity hard, right? So the difficulties for folks with a formed self-concept is navigating the complexity of being themselves and being with others. Right? How do I build relationships without losing my sense of identity? Can I trust my inner voice? How can I be heard and honored and seen by others and be okay? Right? So what we're doing with this kind of client is coaching them to expand, right? Because conflict can sometimes feel like an attack on our identity. When that's the thing we are trying to protect, as Sarah has just beautifully demonstrated with her client example, right? It's all about, am I safe to be me? And this can show up in all different kinds of ways, right? Sometimes we see it in the flip side of what Sarah was sharing with people who are overly people-pleasing, right? And then there is a ton of resentment because my identity doesn't get to shine because I'm taking care of everybody else. Right. You may experience this kind of client. Depending on your client base, this may be the majority of people, or it may be kind of, you know, less common than a forming self-concept. But for folks who have a formed self-concept, the kinds of questions we want to ask them, what do you believe is true about you? Right? What's true about you? So we take some of those protective beliefs and we look at the truth of them, right? What's true about this? What else could be true, right? We're just exploring what else is possible here. So two other questions to really think about, and this is great for a criticism map exploration as well. What's at risk if I allow myself to consider the advantages of someone else's opposing view, right? So what's the strength of their argument, right? And what's at risk if I allow myself to consider the disadvantages of my perspective? These two questions can be really expansive for someone with a formed self-concept. For someone with a forming one, they're like, I don't know what my view is, right? So it's a harder one to answer. But for someone with a sense of self, this is me kind of identity, these questions can be very expansive because they allow us to see that someone else has an opinion of me or of something that I care about. How much of that do I want to pay attention to? How much does, you know, what does that do to me? Do I feel activated by that? Can I allow it and tolerate it? That discomfort? Can I just go, oh, we just think very differently about this? Or is it something that I want to explore further and see where I might be getting activated. It's actually an invitation for me to heal some part of myself. I had a response to an email I sent out to my subscribers last week, where someone emailed to say, I just need to let you know, and I've labored over this email, but whenever you say join the Cool Kids Club, which is just an invitation to join a wait list for a program I'm creating, whenever you say join the Cool Kids Club, I immediately feel so upset by that, because that just makes me think about high school and all the times that I was never in the Cool Kids Club. So I would really encourage you to think about all of us who were never in the Cool Kids Club, and maybe you could change the wording, right? Now, what's at risk if I allow myself to consider the advantages of that? I could change the wording, sure, who cares, right? But what's the disadvantages of that? Well, then someone else has basically said, I need the world to change so I can feel better. That fundamentally goes against how I approach this work. World doesn't need to change at all. So my response was, honey, you know me, and you know that that was intentional. And I too was not in the Cool Kids Club. And I totally encourage you and invite you to sit in that discomfort of what that brings up for you. Because as soon as you choose to think differently about that, it won't matter what anyone's saying about a Cool Kids Club. And she kind of thought about it for a couple of days and came back and went, okay, so that was uncomfortable. But it's like the world doesn't need to change for you to feel better. So you see what I mean, right? But if I was in that kind of people-pleasing mode, I'd be like, oh, I've offended someone, I've got to change that. Sometimes people will give me feedback and I'll be like, oh, I totally got that wrong. That does not feel good to me. I'm going to change this, or I'm going to apologize, or whatever. But other times it's like, no, that is not changing. So this is the thing, right? We get to play with this from a formed self-concept perspective, and we can help our clients to expand and do the same. Another great question, how could you safely integrate? That's constructive criticism, right? Someone's saying, actually, when you fly off the handle at work, it makes everyone feel unsafe. It creates a shit ton of tension. It makes us not trust you. That's really hard feedback for someone to give. It's really hard to receive. How can you safely integrate it? Right? And so that can sometimes be that's a process. It's an amazing gift that you have a coach available, if you have a coach available to help you integrate that. Notice how, depending on your relationship as the coach, your relationship with this kind of thing is going to massively impact your ability to coach a client if you're entangled, right? If you're like, criticism cannot be with that. It must be horrible for you. There's no way I can create some safety for you to integrate that. Let's just avoid it and talk about something more fun, right? So just some questions to think about. Has anyone got anything they want to share as we kind of talk about all of this? Do you have clients that fit in that formed self-concept grouping? Yeah, Iris.
I'm wondering about the formed or forming self-concept, and like, can you remind me again, like, can we be in one part of our lives we can have a formed self-concept and another we don't? Or is it also a bit like how strong you feel that day? Because I find it really hard to say, oh, someone's is in that stage just generally, which I'm sure they can be, but yeah. I was just wondering about how fluid this is, and also how it ties in with the healthy adult self, because I guess we can be that at any stage of what we believe about ourselves. And also just how is it the goal to move someone from one stage to another, or is it not? I'm just kind of the bigger picture is a bit like illusory right now.
Love these questions. So you're absolutely right. The goal isn't to move anyone, because you can access your healthy adult self at any developmental stage. right? When you're in a forming stage, that's about, you know, paying attention to creating your own identity. What is a healthy way for you to think, feel, say, and do about this thing, right? Mm-hmm. Whether that's your work, your relationships, your friendships, what's not working for you, and how do you want to step perhaps away from getting your rules and your ways of being from everyone else and form that for yourself, right? So at that developmental stage, we're pretty much like looking to everybody else to tell us what to do. Mm-hmm. Most kind of young adults are at that stage, right? They are paying attention to their friendship groups, their political affiliations, their organizations, etc., whoever feels comfortable and safe to them. They're paying attention to those voices to form an identity, but it doesn't quite feel like it belongs to them at that point. At some stage, some of us, it's not related to age, but more about our experiences and the relationships we have. If our lives get more complex and we start to see that there are other voices out there that contradict the ones we've been listening to that feel just as true, and we start to realize that no one has the answers for us, we have to kind of come up with those ourselves, then we start to move into this formed self-concept where a sense of identity gets created. Like, oh, that's how I feel about that. This is me. That's not me. And then we start to kind of prize that sense of identity. That becomes the thing we protect. Whereas in a forming stage, it's the risks that will piss the group off. We'll somehow be voted off the island is the thing we're protecting. So most of us, I think, the clients that we're working with are likely to be glimpsing the formed stage. So they're in the process of moving themselves over to that stage. And that can take years, mm-hmm. right? That can also be your 30s, right? but not everyone does. Some people are like, my life works for me. I will follow the group. This is fine. This works. This feels safe. There's no need for me to have a particular identity or feel like my preferences and ideas matter more than the group. We can be at different stages or further into an identity can form in different parts of our lives. But mostly, you know, all things being considered, you get a sense of where a person's at. So the reason to share these stages and to talk about this in relation to conflict is that you can just make some assumptions based on what the client's telling you, mm-hmm. right? So you literally are judging and making assumptions, the things that we're told not to do, right? But we're doing that from a relatively informed place, and we're getting to, that's giving us some indication of what would best support the client at this time, right? So from Sarah's example, for just as a kind of way into this, right, her client has a clear sense of identity, right, and he's protecting that. He's not actually that interested in protecting the group. He's protecting himself. So it's mm-hmm. like, oh, okay, he's probably there. Let's go there, and then we go into that. You'll start to know because people will talk about themselves in relation to others or about themselves. Like it's not usually a conscious thing, right? Very few people know about developmental psychology, right? So they're unlikely to know that there are developmental stages. Where I think this is so helpful for us as coaches is that it's not about isolated beliefs and behaviors. It's not about specific contexts. We're actually dealing with a bit more of a whole person. And it allows us to understand something more of their whole worldview, right? I don't know if that lands for you, Iris, if that helps you.
Yeah, it does, because that just that idea that it's probably more of a worldview or all of them that can either be informing or formed, that definitely helps. Because I think I was thinking about it more like, oh, but they know what they think or who they are at work, but maybe they don't in romantic relationships. But that makes sense, and that you can be your healthy adult self at any stage. And it also brought up like a client of mine, or a past client of mine, who was very opinionated, but who very often would talk about his performance and his stuff in relation to others, because he was in a COO role very like early on in his 20s, and he was very insecure about it. And if I think about it as, oh, he's still forming, because he was reading all the personal development books and all the things and looking for answers and literally like plotting out a way to live. This is what a good life means, is what he wrote about all the time. And yeah, this is really helpful, because I think I can now look at clients with that lens more, because before I felt like, okay, I think I get it, but I also really don't know what to do with this information.
Yeah, I totally get that. And I think the thing is that we're in this too, right? We're in our own stages. So it can be a bit meta, right? So, but I think you're absolutely right. The assumption you're making about this client, the COO client, that sounds, that tracks for me, right? He's seeking an identity. Mm-hmm. So, and this is the important thing. It's not about status, intelligence, whether you're extroverted or introverted. There isn't a lot of research on neurodiversity, but I think that would be a fascinating way to look at this as well. Yeah. There is some cool research around mixed race students, and how, because they have grown up with this like really kind of core identity that is complex, they often zip into a higher or more richer developmental stage. They can handle that complexity in different ways because of that life experience. So and that's referenced in the module 2 workbook. But okay. Yes, so it's just a great way of being able to go, what would support my client? Where does safety come from? Where does psychological safety come from for my client? Is it from developing a healthy self, or is it from expanding one, right? Mm-hmm. And that helps us to kind of just have a good steer on where we go.
Yeah. But one thing, if I can just throw that in, like one thing I found difficult with the forming self-concept client was that I almost, my entanglement, I guess, was to just be like, you know, chill out, just keep going, you're good. Like, you don't need to look for all these answers. So what would you do then with someone who's an informing self-concept, like to make them feel safe? Like, what are there different ways that you access your healthy adult self in the different stages?
Well, yeah, so part of the process for that forming stage is to really allow the client to figure this out, right? So we're asking questions. What else could be true? What about this is working for you and isn't working for you, right? Figuring out the belief structure that's kind of underneath all of this, and looking at what would be a healthier way to do this. So we're always allowing the client at a forming stage to be in the driver's seat, right? I don't have your answers is mostly what I'm saying 100 different ways to a forming self client, that forming self concept client. Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense.
Cool. Nice. Thanks, Iris.
Thank you.
I love this comment from Fiona. A lot of my clients are protecting, I'm a nice person. Right. So I found the experience of being in lockdown, as the Me Too and the Black Lives Matter movements unfolded, fascinating from this perspective, like to be part of it, but slightly lovingly detached as well, like to watch white women particularly I'm nice, I'm not a racist, I'm not blah, blah, blah. Right? And it was like, whoa, maybe you are, right? Could you expand? Can we expand our self-concept to see that we are living in a culture that is racist? So of course we have unconscious biases and all kinds of shit going on for us. Of course we do. Can we be with that, right? And so, and the kind of like defense, oh, it's just woke culture. In my day, we didn't do this, you know. And it's like, oh, okay. So in your day, you weren't curious about this. That might be a bit uncomfortable when now we're starting to have these conversations, right? The same kind of things are rolling out at the moment with women who have identified as feminists who are now being asked to expand their concept of feminism to include trans women. And it's like causing this total meltdown. I just find that fascinating. It's like, can we be with more complexity? When you see that defensiveness, there's often a, I'm a nice person, right? I love people of I don't care what color anyone is, right? This kind of response. It doesn't matter to me what gender expression is, your sexual orientation, etc. Like, we want to be the nice person who's deeply inclusive, but that means we miss out on what are the hidden, slightly uncomfortable biases or areas of discomfort I might have. Because if I'm going to identify as a nice person, I miss the opportunity to actually be honest with myself and look at that. So all to say, like, this sometimes isn't like a, sometimes it's a performative thing, right? We send in the representative of the nice version of us that's on brand and publicly acceptable. And sometimes we miss that opportunity to look at really knowing ourselves and really telling ourselves the truth. And often I think the reason we resist it is actually coming from this place of, it just feels a bit unsafe for me. I'm not quite sure if I want to look at those parts of me that, you know, I've put in the basement. I've kept them out of public view. And now you're asking me to have a little look, and I'm not sure I'm ready to do that. So yeah, it's and it can help us to have some compassion for folks who are, you know, seeing the world get more and more complex. It's good times. Yeah, Fiona.
The place I notice it that was sort of what caused me to think it was a good comment was, it comes up from my clients a lot around when they are managers being able to give feedback. Critical feedback, they really struggle with it, because like, well, I'm a nice person, how do I do that? And as they're stepping more into leadership positions, there's something about holding accountability up the chain and the power dynamic about what is nice versus like what is ethical and sort of some of those things. And you know, like particularly in university structures where often people in the more senior positions actually have less managerial and leadership expertise than some of the people who have come up through professional services side. And there's a, it's really gets really murky in there, and it's all this like, but I want to be a nice person.
Yes. And so notice, so I love this, notice that we've created then a polarity, right? Just advanced polarities work. We create them ourselves. There is the me that is nice and the me that gives critical, difficult feedback. And I've decided that they are polar opposites, right? So that means I can't hold both at the same time. One has to give. But it's a distortion, right? Because as soon as you say, how is giving critical feedback the kindest thing I can do? It's like, whoa. That's no longer separate. That can live together. So yeah. It's like we can introduce that as a healthy belief. What would that look like? If we can, you know, that's a way to kind of play with that. How could it be true that you are both kind and you care about your person and your team and you give them very difficult feedback? How could that be true?
We work a lot in the distinction between nice and kind. Really get people to play in that space.
Beautiful. Really cool. Really cool. So this is where we're at with conflict, right? Is that a couple of things to take away from this. Our client's worldview is not up for question, right? What we're doing is saying, how can you add more things in at a forming self-concept, and how can you expand it at a formed self-concept, right? To take in more complexity, take in more perspectives. And for us as coaches, how do we make peace with the areas that feel a little uncomfortable so that we can stay unentangled, so that we can provide that space for our clients to add more things in, to expand their sense of self. So what I'd suggest you do for some things to take away for homework is, you know, really play in this place of entanglement. Where am I getting stuck? And where are your clients getting stuck? Right? This sense of stuckness is going to be a great invitation to explore. Thank you for coming to my TED talk. This was great. Anyone got any questions at all before we close for today? You're feeling all topped out with conflict stuff. Yeah. Okay. So we have a break next week, and then we're back to look at the compass, which really takes into account the four aspects of the healthy adult self. So I think that is going to be super fun, super interesting, really starting to get into self-belief, self-acceptance, self-worth and self-trust, really practical ways. Quite a meaty old module as well. And then number 10 is all about goals and dreams, which is where you can also start with a client. So good stuff. Okay. Thanks so much, everybody. Have fun this week. Enjoy the heat if you can. Stay hydrated. I'll see you in a couple of weeks. All right. Bye,
everyone. Thanks,
Tess. Thanks.